been murdered. All the friends have flown before. On the morrow he will leave me, as my hopes have flown before. And the bird said nevermore.
You're listening to The Call Podcast with Brandon and Josh.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand new edition of The Call. It is a Baltimore Ravens podcast where we talk anything and everything Baltimore Ravens football. Thank you for listening to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Player.fm, Overcast, and Google Play Music. We're back after the Thanksgiving break. We've got lots and lots to talk about. Let's not waste any time. Joining me as always to talk all about it, my buddy Josh. What's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm wonderful, man. Post-Thanksgiving in the Christmas season. How was your holiday, man?
Thanksgiving was great. The holiday season is definitely here. Christmas preparations have begun. I'm ready to watch a lot of good classic movies. I'm ready to do all my shopping from my couch on my computer. But it's also great to see Santa wearing a purple Santa hat for those Baltimore Ravens. We got to talk about it. The Ravens beat the San Francisco 49ers this past Sunday in a game that kept you on the edge of your seat. It was old school. It was an in-the-trenches type of game. Josh, I gotta ask, what was it like? I mean, it was a rainy game. It was one that I'm sure was not enjoyable to sit in, especially when things were not going the Ravens' way. But what an ending. What a storybook ending. The Ravens were able to come away with yet another W, thankfully. But take us through that day. What was it like being there in person?
Yeah, man. To me, it was just a messy, cold day. You almost just wish it would snow, and it did. 3 hours up the road, apparently, in New York, it was snowing like crazy. So it was like just the snow line didn't get south enough for us, and it stayed, maybe 40s and just torrential downpour of rain, and it was miserable. When your team is balling out the way they're balling out, you stick it out for those kind of elements. And Brandon, you might call me crazy, you know I'm crazy, but if this team was as bad as the Jets, Dolphins, Redskins in the rain, I'd still be out there because I've been there before. I'm through thick and thin, and God bless it, right? But when the team's winning, and we were saying that heading into the game, and saying like, oh, it's sloppy, it's rainy, it's cold, it's miserable, but hey, the team does well. So I said, if we're going to be cheering, and I didn't expect a blowout, even though I kind of predicted one, by 20, the weather kind of bogged that down, right? So it just was really tough to see a blowout in those conditions, and it lived up to the hype. Everybody was like, why is this game not flexed? And, being there, the atmosphere, I thought it was still a decent crowd for a 1 o'clock rainy, sloppy game. But two heavyweight titans right here going at it is the best way I can describe it. I mean, both teams were kind of evenly matched. The scoreboard dictated that. And you had to feel, starting how the game started, the Ravens, deferred. They took the ball on defense. They got the ball in the second half, and you had to feel good, right? Okay, you almost stop them. The Niners showed the real aggressive side, as the Ravens do. They went for it on 4th-and-2, and they threw a bomb, and Marcus Peters kind of misplayed the ball, and Deebo Samuel got a touchdown. And I'm sitting there thinking, I'm like, uh-oh, maybe the Niners really got our number. Maybe this might be a loss. But it was early, right? They strike first early, and they usually do what the Ravens do, get out early, take the ball. And I was actually surprised speaking of that, because the Ravens usually do a good job of taking the ball right down the field and scoring. I would think that it's kind of funny how that even something as simple as winning the coin toss or losing it or like receiving it and kicking it at the onset of the game. Man, I don't know what your thoughts are, man. I'd love to know, but my thing is just like with the offense now, being that this is more an offensive-oriented team and not defense, usually we would kick the ball off. We want to start on defense first, get our defense out there, get the crowd going early. Maybe that's what the Raiders wanted to do. As sloppy as it was, maybe they wanted the crowd in early. But, you know, and then even more so, it looked dire because the Ravens actually did something crazy on their first drive. Sam Cook actually punted. The Ravens didn't really do anything on their first drive. First time they didn't score any points in a while, it seemed like, on the first drive. So how the game started and being there, it was kind of like, oh, no, it's going to be one of these games. We got to sit down here, and now we got to come from behind. But, Brandon, as the game went on, the resilience of this team just showed, man. And before you knew it, it was a 14-7 Ravens lead. Ravens scored 14 on an answer, man. It was one of those. It reminded you of this team was in our division, right? If you're watching this, it reminds you of like an old school Ravens Steelers game where it's just like it's rainy, it's AC North football, it's ground and pound, no teams really winging the ball, throwing it, and the scoreboard really dictated how close it really was.
Yeah, I mean, when we were talking earlier this year, you know, when we were previewing the Ravens Steelers game, we were discussing whether or not that rivalry still meant what it used to mean, because the way the NFL is changing and the way that Lamar is bringing change and to the quarterback position, that there's, you know, this team is more offensively oriented than it once was. And, you know, we kind of discussed that weeks ago, but I completely agree with what you said just now, that this felt more like an AFC North game. It was rainy. It was muddy. I mean, at one point, I think it was Lamar got thrown to the ground and he comes back up and his number 8 is just, it's not white anymore. It's completely a different color from all the mud. So yeah, it was very good and it was very fun to see this team in those elements and to see how they were able to react to it. And I think that they did everything that they needed to do, obviously, because they walked away with a win, but it was such a good return to what the Ravens were used to that some of these young players maybe haven't experienced yet. So I think this was a great game. I mean, as far as regular season games go, I don't want to say this may be one of my favorite of all time, but it definitely ranks in probably top 10, top 5. I mean, you and I always talk about that snowy Minnesota game that we went to. I mean, this has got to be right up there with it. There was drama, there was suspense, and it came down to Justin Tucker, and it came down to a kick. I mean, Lamar fumbled the ball, which we're going to talk about that in a second, but that didn't let him stop him. This was a team that wanted the win. They played the full game, and nothing was going to slow them down. It was you know, such a confidence builder for the players and the fans, I think.
You know what's refreshing, too, though? The fact that this was a close game either way, the Ravens had so many blowout wins in a row. I mean, the last time they really won a game was, what, they won by 6 points against the Bengals, right? So it was like, you know, it was refreshing to see, apart from the that started the winning streak, the Steelers and Bengals wins back-to-back where they were so close, one possession. It's been so long because the Ravens clipped off 14, a 17-point win, and then just drubbed the Texans and the Rams. It just, and the train just kept going and going and going, and then they drubbed the Bengals again in that regard. So it was kind of refreshing to see win or lose. You know, not knowing the outcome of the game, right in the middle of the game, I actually was like really thankful, you know, that, you know, to bring the Ravens down to earth, because you can't win them all like that, right? There's no way that they're going to win the rest of the games, or, you know, whether it's regular season or playoffs, and they're going to go out and drub a team by 30 and skull drag them. There's no way. It's the NFL, right? They're all paid millionaires. You know, there's going to be a time where either Ravens might lose one, or they're going to be trailing, or it's going to be close. So I was really, you know, speaking of Thanksgiving week, believe it or not, I was actually thankful for a close game. Now, Mother Nature, I think, played a lot into it, and Lamar alluded to that, saying he was very frustrated with it because he felt like it slowed him down with the passing, and both teams were, because, you know, both teams offensively couldn't really showcase their players and do what they really do best. But, you know, and breaking this down, I really want to – there's some concerns to go around, and then there's a lot of high praise, right? You, like you said, high drama. But Getting to the fumble before you get to Lamar, the Ravens finally capitalized on the first one. They got pressure on Garoppolo. Garoppolo was the first one to actually fumble the ball. Both quarterbacks had a fumble each, end up being detrimental with points off. The Ravens, actually cashing in for a touchdown. The Niners actually cashed theirs in for a field goal, so there was a difference in that regard. But the Ravens being down 7-0 early, there it is. The defense came in, made a stop. There's the fumble. And the Ravens wasted no time going right down there and throwing a touchdown. Lamar throwing a touchdown pass to Mark Andrews. And what a glorious drive it was. And then they tied the game up right there. And at that point, you knew it was going to be a game of games. And the resilience of the Ravens coming back with their drive, driving it all the way down third and goal, calling a great bootleg to Lamar. And just seeing the resilience of this team in this kind of weather conditions, they really showed what they're made of. I mean, you're right. It's nice to see Lamar cutting up and the team on the sideline resting in the fourth quarter and seeing RG3 and sometimes because the game's in hand. But, this, like you said in the beginning, you had to play every minute, every second, every inch mattered in this. And right down to the last 3 seconds where we had Justin Tucker line up for the all faithful field goal as he's used to doing all the time. And again, you know what? We never really loved about this, though, that even though it was a 2017 win, I kind of felt like, how we've been talking Lamar.
Mm-hmm.
I still think in this game we still did because he accounted for 2 touchdowns, right? The Ravens scored 20 points, 2 touchdowns, 2 field goals. In a regard, at the end, how many times has it been Lamar, like Monday night, right, for example, 2 weeks ago, balling out, throwing 5 touchdown passes on a Monday night football game, and he was the star of the show, basically, in L.A., him in Hollywood, right? Hollywood connected for 2, Sneed connected for 2, Ingram was beast-moding it on the ground with a touchdown on the ground, a touchdown receiving. So it's like, everybody was getting involved, but it was Lamar. Now here, even though he still led the team there and had his 100 yards passing, 100 yards rushing, or close to it in that regard, Justin Tucker was the star. It was kind of like Lamar was the role player. He was getting time, leading the team to getting timely third and fourth down conversions, putting his team in position to win. And at the end, it was Justin Tucker's time to shine. And it's been a while since we had to rely on a Justin Tucker kick to either tie to go in overtime or win it. And even when he lined up at the very least, even with the conditions, you knew it was almost automatic, right, with JT. But you knew at the very least, he misses it, you're going to overtime and getting a fresh crack at it, which I did not want. So I'm glad it ended in regulation. But what a drama-filled game. It kept you on the edge of your seat. It was really – I was really nervous. Fourth quarter, you didn't know which way the game was going to go. The fans felt like that too, but – I really want to focus on before we close out the game and really I want to focus on this. What was concerning to me is Mostert was running big time on the edges. The Ravens could not stop him. And I mean, I don't know if you saw his stats. I think he had like 164 yards rushing in that game or something like that. It was 130. It was big time. He was gashing us so bad that I was surprised on that 4th and 1 where they decided to pass instead of running it. I'm very surprised. And you can give credit to Wormley for batting the ball down, and I know they made a play, right? But you almost have to give credit to the play calling because that kind of played in it too, because to me, that should have screamed run the way the Niners were running it all day. I mean, it was concerning to me. They couldn't stop it.
That is definitely a concern, and I'm hoping that the coaching staff is going to take a look at that and move forward with that, because we do have the Buffalo Bills coming right up this Sunday, and they're not a bad team either. They've got a winning record as well, not as good as the 49ers had, but still up there with the Ravens and competing still. So hopefully they're going to address that. But before we move on from the 49ers game, there's two things I do want want to bring up, and you and I have complained a lot the last couple seasons about John Harbaugh and his time management, and I thought he did a fantastic job for this game. I mean, to get it down to 5 seconds and then let Justin Tucker do his thing. I mean, it all came down to Tucker. It was all put on his shoulders, and due to the clock management that Harbaugh was able to come up with, he was able to close it out the way that they did. So I thought that was a great thing. And we got to talk about Lamar's fumble. And I don't even know if you want to talk about the fumble. Did you watch Ravens Wired for this week?
Yeah, it was incredible, as always.
It was a really good one.
Our Ravens production just speaks for itself. They do such great work with their pieces, man.
And that's why they're Emmy winners. And Ravens Wired was really good this week. And it was.
And we have an Emmy nominated guy here on the show, right?
That's true. That's true. Yeah. I was there Emmy night. I am. I absolutely am. I am an Emmy nominee for this past year. I don't want to humble brag or anything.
Emmy nominated call. We should intro that from now on. Yeah. Emmy nominated lead call or something like that. Yeah, it's there. You go.
Let's
put some accolades on this thing.
But
get back to Wired.
Yeah, I agree though. Let's start just if I can bring up my Emmy nomination in any way, I think I should do that.
You earned it, man. You work hard.
But let's talk about the Wired episode. So after Lamar fumbled the ball. They focus in on this. I even noticed it during the Sunday broadcast, but I'm glad that they showed what happened on the sidelines. Lamar got up from the fumble, and what's the first thing you see? You see him patting himself on the chest, pretty much saying, "That's on me." He took ownership of that fumble, and he took ownership of making a mistake, and he gets on the sidelines, and he went to his entire offensive line as they're sitting on the bench and said, "My fault," and shook their hands. And then you see, you know, Mark Ingram say, you know, "It's all right, LJ, we got this, I got your back," and he goes, "I got your back," and he's like, no, I got your back, it's fine, we'll get it back, don't worry about it. So Lamar, we've talked about this every week, and I love this about Lamar, he is leading by example. This guy definitely has that leadership quality that you want in a football player, in your quarterback. To see him admit that he made a mistake and that this was on him and that he was going to get it back, I was so impressed. I love this guy for what he does on the field and off the field. You want to see that. He's mad at himself for letting that happen. I don't think he's going to let it happen again, or he's going to work really hard to have it not happen again. But I love seeing that. So if you haven't checked out Ravens Wired and you want to check it out and see what we're talking about, we'll put the link up on our Facebook page. But it was great to see that. Lamar got up. He took ownership of it. And again, I said this in the last couple weeks. He goes, "All right, we made a mistake. That's all right. We're going to move on and we're going to get it back." And I love it.
Absolutely. And you bring up a great point. I didn't see the sideline interaction. That's, you know, obviously me being their lad, but I did notice when he get up, I can see from my seats he was pounding his chest and saying "my bad," and they showed on the Jumbotron. You can definitely tell he was frustrated. And what does that say about a leader, bro? It's, you know, he could have easily blamed on the rain, right? Oh, the ball was slippery, or he could have credited the defender, right? Harris did make a great play. You know, he kind of, you know, Lamar did a little spin move, and Harris kind of latched onto his arm and kind of pried that ball loose. The defender made a great play. He kind of tackled him and then laid on the ground and kind of caught the ball at the same regard. I actually, as always, you know, I record the games as I go to the games live, and I got to rewatch this one on TV, and I did see that fumble up close and see and how the play was. So, and then along with watching the Wired segment, the kid just shows, he oozes leadership. Not just shows it, but he just oozes it, you know. Taking ownership, saying "my bad," not blaming him or anything else. You know, he could easily, like I said, he could easily credit the defender, but no, he's like, "No, what? That's not going to happen." And what does that speak to Lamar's growth, right, as a player? Last year, how many times did he fumble in the 8-9 games he played with us, right? Or, you know, a handful of games. You know, he fumbled a lot, and that was his knock. You know, everybody said, "Oh, I can't pass." But then my concern personally was, well, he's got a hole in the football, and then ultimately a fumble actually led to his demise in the game ending against the Chargers in the playoff game. So to me, how is that refreshing to me that the very thing that did him in and the mistake that did him in the playoff game, he very much corrected it this year, where you're in week 13, essentially week 12 with the bye week, with 13, you know, whatever, 12, 13, whatever. I still say it's week 12. I don't really count a bye week. You know, it's week 12, 12th game, and it's his first fumble of the year. And it could have hurt us, but it didn't. I felt like it was a big momentum changer because remember at that point, that was early. It was in the third quarter. Ravens had the lead, 17-14. That was on the what? That was at least, I think he fumbled it, what, on the 30 or on the 25. They were already well within field goal range to put it within at least six. They were driving. They probably could have scored a touchdown there to put it with 10. It probably would have changed the dynamic of the game, and the Ravens wouldn't have been up by double digits in two scores, and it probably, the way the game was going, it probably would have been over. But it changed the dynamic. And, you know, again, you know, and him on the sidelines, that just speaks. And again, what about the quality of leadership? Not only that, but his teammates. I got your back. You said something in that segment, man. I got your back. And he's like, no, I got your back. Speaking of Mark Andrews, no, they're going back and forth. These guys play for him. And I heard, you know, I've heard a lot of players speak highly of him. I mean, Yanda just gushes about him. And these guys would break their back for this guy. And it just shows, you know, you're willing to go to war with this guy. And again, man, I'm happy to have that in quality in our leader and the quarterback. And it just speaks. And, you know, again, this was one of those games where just, hey, you know, to me, the Ravens are already dangerous, right? But if you can win ugly, because this was like a game and they came out on the winning end ugly, you already know they can win pretty. But when you can win ugly and win pretty, when things aren't going your way and it's bad weather, to me, what more of a dangerous team do you want? I mean, they showed they can do it any way. They can win ugly. They can win clean. It's just amazing that we're along for this ride. And a lot of things happened this Sunday, team history in regard. And as we know, it's a Ravens win. Brandon, dude, this team has won 8 straight games. Just think about that, man. Sit back. Their last loss was September 29th. They have 2 months of winning football. Like I told you, undefeated October, undefeated November, closing out the Monday night game, and then starting off December in winning fashion. This is a franchise record 8th straight win, and this is a franchise best 10-2 record. Never been at that. And thanks to a very early Christmas gift on Sunday Night Football, shout out to the Houston Texans, who I know we drubbed here in Baltimore. Shout out to Houston Texans for taking care of business. The Patriots fell, and as is this week, the Ravens are a current number one seed in the playoff race, which they've never been. But again, we say that, you know, but we don't really get too excited about it, right? Because, and even Harbaugh alluded to it, no one's crying right now. The Ravens got work to do. They're half a game in the lead. Hey, the Ravens could lose Sunday, and the Patriots could win against the Chiefs, and then they're right back in the second seat. This thing's got 4 weeks left, like Harbaugh said. Let's wait till 4 weeks when we start crowning everybody, and it's official. Ravens got their own destiny, but it's just fun to think about that. This dream scenario of the road to Miami coming through Baltimore is right here, and the Ravens control every aspect of that. They're their own worst enemy at this point. I mean, yeah, they can use some help, right? It wouldn't hurt if the Patriots could lose another game and win one to get another game advantage on it, but the Ravens take care of their business. Hey, they went out. They don't lose another game the rest of the year. The road comes to Baltimore, which is fantastic, but let's take it week by week, not get ahead. But you know, opportunity number 1 of 5 in December is already under the books, and with a great win against San Francisco. And you know what I was most impressed about, too, with the team is, speaking of the game plan, you know, I felt like, you know, Lamar handled it well. I felt like Lamar really couldn't get the running lanes going outside, but he did have a nice juke move. Again, another highlight reel move. He juked inside and out, and the guy fell over. It was fantastic. But their superstar tight end, speaking of the Niners, George Kittle, he had a very, very quiet day. 2 catches for 17 yards. The dude is just a monster all year, and the fact that the Ravens held him to such a low number, it was really impressive to me. That really stood out, saying that they weren't going to let their weapons kill him. I know they couldn't stop Mostert at 146 yards rushing, but that was their only Achilles heel at that point. You know, Garoppolo really couldn't get rhythm going apart from that one long 4th-and-2 play. That was pretty much it. And to me, it was the key to the game. It was awesome to see. They kept them in check.
Absolutely. And so that was the 49ers game this past Sunday. The Ravens looked great. What a fun game to be a part of. You were out in the elements. I was eating all-you-can-eat crabs and drinking beer, and it was a great time to be out in Ocean City. So I had a good time there. So before we start talking about this Buffalo Bills game coming up, you had a really great experience. I know you're going to want to bring it up. This past week, you actually had dinner with your best buddy, your good friend that you apparently spend every weekend with now, Ray Lewis. You started this season off with going to his boot camp and working out with the man. Now you go to the restaurant he owns, and the dude's pouring you a drink and cutting your meat for you and doing everything else. So tell us about this experience you had this past week.
Yeah, man, it seems like any event that Ray can have, I've been blessed enough to get to go to it. I mean, you know, hard work and sacrifices in my life led me to be able to enjoy the fruits of that labor. First and foremost, I want to say that because, hey, you know, it's as you know, with Ray comes a price tag on that sucker. So, but, you know, but hey, it's all, I take it on stride. And these experiences, as you heard from the boot camp and now shared on that, you know, that was priceless for me and for anybody who participated in that. But for all those who don't know, it was actually a 2-night event. At his restaurant, Lou Gambino's, he actually went partnership with the Gambino family, bought out, I think it was Ciabella's before, and turned it into called Lou Gambino's. It's an Italian restaurant.
Do they play just Childish Gambino over the speakers?
Nah, no difference. But yeah, that would be very fitting for that kind of, Childish Gambino. Great artist. But, you know, one of your personal favorites. I know some of his old stuff is some of my favorites, too. And you know, I always rock out to that during the weekend and workouts. But besides the fact, it was a 2-night event, so I had a great opportunity to go down there Monday night. I was there Monday and Tuesday. So I had two great nights. So Monday night I went down there, autograph signing. I got in and got down there, and what I had him autograph is, if you recall, a couple years back, Ray Lewis unveiled his cigar line, and he had his signature cigar event here in Baltimore at Dan's Cigar Lounge. Got to, you know, interact with Ray and really speak to him there and enjoy a cigar with him. And, you know, I got a picture taken with him, right? So I print out the picture with me and him at that cigar event, and I did it vintage black and white, kind of like the gangster look. And I got there. Well, I was – well, even set the stage, because you just mentioned boot camp – I wore his No Excuses Lion t-shirt that I got from there. And right away, of course, he recognized it, saying, "Nice t-shirt." And I got up to the table we were signing, and he recognized the t-shirt. And he goes, I said, "I was actually at your boot camp." And for once, he finally said, "Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember." He remembered. I was like, "Yeah, finally." So for all those who always say, I didn't really point blank ask him, does he remember? So everybody always wants to know, for all these events, does he know you or does he remember you? But he actually did remember. And, you know, when I get to his dinner, his financial advisor, who I met at the boot camp, was also at the dinner. He also remembered me. So it's good to know that, you know, when you go to these events, go often enough. But he remembered. He said, "Oh, yeah, that's right." And, yeah, I said, "You about ran me in the ground," and he laughed. And I said, "But I was a better man for it." And so I enrolled the picture. He went, "Oh, wow, that's a nice photo." I said, "Thank you, sir." And I said, "One of my best friends," my shout out to Mike Duff, he actually, made I print out the picture, but he did a custom for me. He did it in a certain way, edited the photo, and then put Ray's logo on that with his dance pose and his signature there. So Ray signed the photo for me. And then he actually mentioned that Super Bowl weekend, because obviously, where's the Super Bowl? Miami. Where did Ray go to school? Miami. Where's Ray from? Lakeland, Florida. So it's kind of fitting. And he said he's actually running a boot camp the Saturday before the Super Bowl at the University of Miami. He goes, "I bet y'all see it there." I said, "The Ravens make it. The ticket's bought, bro." And then he said, "All right, man." I said, "Well, I'll see you tomorrow at the dinner." And then obviously Tuesday. And I came to the dinner. It was really low-key. For all those who don't know, the dinner, it was exclusive to 50 tickets. Anybody can buy them, but it was only open to 50 tickets total. So I bought them and, got to, sit down with him. And his Hall of Fame bust was on display. Got to see that in all its glory once again and take a photo with it. And and you know, enjoy a 6-course meal. So the dinner was really nice. It was in the back of his restaurant, sectioned off, VIP style, and Ray had his assistant and his financial advisor there, and so we got down seated, and obviously the 6-course meal started. It was pretty good meal though. It wasn't like a as you would think, like you get to select things off menu. The menu was already predetermined.
Right.
So we get there and it was all laid out for us and it would show you just course 1 through 6. And so Ray gets in and pretty much this is how it went. It was like as he was speaking, the wait staff would come in and they would give us the course 1 and then take our dirty dishes and then bring us course 2 as he was speaking. So it was kind of unique where we actually get to, you know, actually enjoy the food while he's speaking. And it's kind of great. I had a good friend, Chris, who showed up to the event. For others who don't know, my friend Chris Lupton, who runs Lupton Sports Collectibles. Shout out to him. He does a lot of great events. Just had a Looting Nada this week. Had an awesome event as well. You know, he was there, and he actually got me because actually at the end, I don't want to fast forward it, but I did ask a great question. I'll get to that in a little bit. But apparently, I was blessed enough to have Chris surprised me with taking a video of me asking a question. So I have footage of that. And, you know, maybe I can try to get you the audio on it. But I'll certainly recap it for you. And he got some good nuggets from Ray. And I got some good photos there, too. But Ray spoke. Course 1, I'll run down through the course menu for you very quickly. Course 1 was goat cheese and figs. Course 2 was squash soup. Course 3 was stuffed mushroom with crab cake. Course 4 was a house salad. Course 5 was herb crusted salmon with rice. And course 6 was a choice between a chocolate cake or a cannoli. And I got the cannoli, of course. I'm Italian. So, we got fed really well. And we also got fed by way of Ray speaking, man. And you've heard his Hall of Fame speech. You've heard all the Ray speeches. But when you hear Ray speak about leadership and teamwork, and this is what he's doing. He's doing a motivational series now. You know, he does his boot camp, doing the workouts and all that. Now he's doing this kind of leadership thing where he's going around and traveling and doing the, you know, that's what he does. He's motivational teamwork speaking. He spoke from everything from some things about his personal life to his playing days to, you know, and he even brought up Lamar and what's going on currently. So he talked about a lot. And I have 4 pages of notes full of things from Ray, some nuggets. Some things that jumped off at me were Ray spoke about the Bruce Lee study, saying he studied Bruce Lee. And he said basically what he learned from Bruce Lee about, and he equated to his film study. It's better to do one thing 10,000 times than to do a multitude of things 10,000 times. And you get the repetition that he means honing in on one skill and just doing that one thing consistently over and over again. Because then you're just because he always say those small things consistently leads to greatness. So he talked about that. One thing that stuck out with me is one of the last things he said of the night was servanthood is synonymous with leadership. He said, you can't be a leader until you first be a servant. And that just spoke to me because I've always said that. You have to be selfless. You have to learn to serve before you can lead. You know, and I think a lot of great leaders, they always do that. And whether they've done it earlier in their life or career, but you see how Ray is and you see how Lamar is. Could be their upbringing. It could be the way that it's just their values. He spoke about all that. He mentioned Lamar. He said Lamar's just, he was joking too, and he actually said it before on air, but he's not lying. He actually joked and said, you know, hey, he still works out. It'd be nice to play with Lamar, man. And he goes, it's, you know, and he said, don't tempt me. And we're all laughing. But then some people asked him about the Dancing with the Stars experience and how that was for him. And, you know, he said the surgery went well. And he said, he joked and said he couldn't go to an airport without the 50-year-old women crowd would say, you're my favorite. And, you know, yeah, he was joking about that and having a laugh and then, you know, and sharing the experience of how he learned to dance in such a short amount of time. And you know, we got some good laughs out of Ray. Ray was just loose and, you know, sharing his heart about that. He shared about his companies, what he's doing with his charities, you know, Power 52 and the initiative there. He said he just came back from Africa and doing some things out there, some outreach and blessing people out there. And, and he's just keeping it low key. He said he don't want the media to know. He's just doing his thing. You know, it's just what he wants to do. He wants to empower and reach people and help and change the world. And his philosophy is he wants to change a billion lives and has to start with changing one. And you know, he's just doing great things, man. And you know, he's dynamic, as you know. And he came up for a Q&A at the end. And of course, I raised my hand high and proud, and I wanted to say something. And this is what I asked Ray. I wrote down something he said about the Bruce Lee study, saying he learned that if you keep thinking about a thing, you'll never get it done. And what he really meant by that, elaborate, is really powerful to hear, because he said most people just, you keep thinking about it, and instead of just doing it, you just keep dwelling on it. And he goes, nothing's going to get done. You can think all you want, but you got to do, you got to take action. So, and for me as a leader and growing, Brandon, I tend to overthink a lot. Like, you wouldn't think that, right? Like, I'm usually very impulsive and my mind's made up, but there's a lot of times where we all have weaknesses and strengths. My weakness is sometimes I really tend to overthink things. Like, because in my job, I'm an analyst. I'm a loan officer. I assess data. I'm supposed to make sense of things and look at, does this make sense? I have to look at patterns, and sometimes I have to really dig deep, and some things I miss, and it causes me to overthink. And I'm like, and then sometimes it's like, even though it's right in front of you, I still overthink, because it just, you have to learn to slow it down. And he alluded to that about Lamar, and even himself saying the great ones, the game slows down for them. Like Peyton, he alluded to Peyton and Tom Brady himself, and Lawrence Taylor. He said those kind of players, when they're so good and they study, the game slows down. So, and then in the spirit of that, I brought up that exact quote, and then I said, Ray, I'm going to share a quote with you, one of my favorites. Brandon, one of my favorite movies is Top Gun, and in that movie, Tom Cruise's character sits in that room when they were dissecting his flight and his dog flight patterns and all that, and he said, you don't have time to think up there. If you think, you're dead. And I equate to that for being impulsive, because sometimes there are situations where we don't know, you know, we can't really think about it. We just got to go. You just got to go with your gut. You got to go with your natural ability and just let it come to you, right? And I summarized all that by saying this, Ray. I asked him, what are your thoughts about leadership and growth, the opportunity of being impulsive versus being strategic? And I let him answer that. He answered it great and summarized his answer for me. He said, you got to write it down. He always brings up the good book. He said, in the good book, you write the vision and make it plain. He's always a firm believer of writing things down. And he said, that clears your mind. And I can certainly play the audio for you. I think I have it. I listened to it, but I've just been a whirlwind of things. I have to make sure that the answer's there. But I the video of me asking the question is certainly out there. I have it. So you can see, certainly see Ray in his own words, what he said to me. But it was great to actually, you know, raise my hand, ask Ray a question that was I thought of during the conversation. I went in there. I had a few questions of my own, but they always conform anytime I'm in this leadership setting. And I do these kind of things at the bank, right? From when I speak with executive leaders, I sometimes have questions to go in every meeting, but they change. And when that just spoke to me, because I literally circled, overthink and circled it, because that's what I do. Instead of being impulsive and just doing my natural ability, sometimes I take a step back. I'm like, is this really necessary? And then what happens is I get slowed down. And that's why I told him, I was like, you know, I just need to just, you know, think about it and go. Don't think and go, and just write it down and get it off your mind and out of the way on the page. And it just was a great conversation. He talked everything about leadership and teamwork and about what the Ravens are doing and how everybody's buying into what Lamar's leadership is. And, you know, Ray even said he has the it factor, and you can't teach the it factor with Lamar. And, you know, he alluded to everything from, you know, his leadership to his playing style, which is unconventional, and, you know, and he actually alluded to Lamar when he first got to town. He went over to Ray's house and spent some time with him and learned. So right away, you know, our newest goat right now, he's young, but he's earning his goat status pretty quickly, right? With all his accolades this year. And you know, he learned from the goat himself, and it just was a great dinner. And then actually at the end, I got to take a picture with him and talk to him a little bit. I got photos of that interaction. handed my phone off to the photographer there, and she was taking photos, and she took a lot of flurry of them where she got me talking with Ray again, and actually asked him. It was kind of funny. You know, me and him were shooting a breeze for maybe 2 minutes, you know, just leaning against the stage where the bus was. And, you know, I said, Ray, I said, I know you have your line, but what's your favorite cigar outside your line? Of course, he was messing with me. He goes, well, the Ray Lewis cigar, of course. I said, Ray, outside of your line. He's like, the Ray Lewis cigar. I was like, all right. And he finally broke and told me his favorite cigar. And so I'll never forget that now. And I now know what Ray's favorite stick is. So, you know, so it's definitely cool there. And then I told him about Miami. And I said, it'd be great to get down there. And he goes, bro. He goes, you don't even know. He's like, Ravens get down there. It's a whole nother level because Ray's got so many things planned. It's his alma mater. It's Miami. It's the Super Bowl. And you had the purple with black train on it. It's just, it's going to pop off. He's like, I don't even want to think about it right now. He goes, that's going to be something special. And he knows his team's going places this year. And, you know, we got to share a moment. And it was just a great time with Ray and to enjoy a leadership kind of atmosphere and dinner in a very formal setting. And in his restaurant, the food was great. It's an Italian cuisine restaurant. We didn't obviously have the Italian part other than the cannoli, I felt. But nonetheless, the food was enjoyable for me. It was my first time down there. So I would definitely highly recommend anybody. It's called Lou Gambino's. It's down on High Street in Baltimore. I think it's right across the street from Michi's, if I believe it or not. So it's down there in that district. It's you know, it's awesome. So if anybody's down there, please feel free to, you know, go check them out.
It's in Little Italy, yeah. Right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I was going to say it is in Little Italy, so you can't miss it. You know, it's right there. So, yeah, wonderful time, wonderful evening. And, you know, we'll see what happens. And if this team gets down to Miami, I have to be doing another boot camp and going to the Super Bowl, huh?
Man, if you're going to ache, I guess, before the Super Bowl, I guess that's...
I'm not playing in it. But, yeah, and then, of course, I got to, you know, reminisce with his financial advisor for a few moments and catch up. And, you know, just, and then it just was awesome. Awesome environment, awesome nuggets. But that's my interaction with him. When I asked him the question, I'll certainly pass along all the videos and photos. I think I posted, Lou Gambino's Facebook page posted the pictures, the lady that ran the event. She posted the pictures out there. Her name's Deb. She's awesome. She posts a lot of pictures. She actually got a nice picture of me, and I didn't know this. She got a nice picture of me at the onset when Ray came into the room. He actually went to each table individually and greeted everybody, shook their hand, and asked them how they were. Thank you for coming out. He didn't just come in to speak. Like, he actually took the time to, like, say hi to everybody, and they were nice enough to really get that shot for me. So at that first interaction with Ray coming to the table and introducing himself again, that was captured. So again, a lot of great moments captured at that night, and I'll never forget it. And it was worth every price, every penny price of admission to really be in there. And, you know, and again, hey, if you could be a fly on the wall on one of these things, it's just hearing him speak. It's just, he just goes through it all, man. And one of my favorite things about that, and we'll wrap up with the Ray talk, is got video of it too. It's on there. I think my friend Chris got it. He said something about Peyton. He went through a Peyton Manning story, right? Because of the, obviously from the Mile High Miracle game. He actually sat down with Peyton one time and said, he goes, they were out in an event or somewhere, and he kind of, and Peyton looked at him and said, Ray, I don't even like you very much. And Ray goes, you know what, Peyton? I don't really like you very much either. But he equated to that by saying they didn't like playing against each other because they were so good at their craft. And Ray let something out of the bag, which is pretty cool. He said something, he said Peyton Manning's wife said Peyton would actually go off in a separate room in his house. And when they were playing the Ravens, or they knew Ray Lewis' game was coming up, he would go and watch Ray, like one play Ray does 100 times. And that equates back to what I said earlier about the Bruce Lee thing. You want to do one thing 100 times over. You know, he said Peyton Manning, and he would actually call him out. He told his wife, he goes, are you serious? And she goes, no, dead. Like, he studies you. And this is what they do. Remember how the respect that Brady had? Remember Brady and Ed Reed? You know, he put on his wristband, watch out for 20. And then remember the Sunday night game? He saw his nemesis in the tunnels.
That's right.
So it's just, you could see that the Ray Payton had their thing, and Brady and Reed had their thing. That's special, and it just shows you the craft. Like, these guys are like, I don't like playing against you, but it was a compliment because that's how good they were. Because and like Ray said, and what he meant by that was he didn't like playing against him because Payton knew everything he was going to do because he studied him that much. That's what he meant by that at the end. So, and to me, it was just like refreshing to hear these things that you don't hear all the time from Ray, and just to be there to soak it up. Hoping I did it justice. I mean, it's nothing like being there, but if anybody has a chance to do anything like that with him, I highly recommend if he does it again. I don't know. I'm hoping he does it again. I'll certainly be at the next one. Hopefully, anybody else can join in. It'll be great. But yeah, my week was filled with that. And that's how my week went, obviously, after the game. So we had a great Ravens win on Sunday. Then Monday and Tuesday were filled with some Ray Lewis festivities. So it's been a great week. And then now we got another intense game coming up with the Buffalo Bills, with that regard. And, another doozy on the docket at 1 o'clock.
That's right. This is not going to be an easy game. This is a good Buffalo Bills team, very different than the last couple of years. They have former Raven John Brown on their team as well. But news coming out today, it's a little scary, but Marquise Brown was limited in practice again with an ankle injury. It's scary to hear about that. He was a full participant on Wednesday, but he was limited on Thursday. So we know when he got drafted that he was recovering from a foot surgery. He had an ankle injury in October that kept him out of the lineup for 2 weeks. So you don't want to hear about him being limited in practice on Thursday before a Sunday game. Hollywood has definitely become a huge part of this offense. We know Mark Andrews is Lamar's favorite target, but Marquise Brown, Hollywood, he can stretch the field. He can get into those situations that see him limited in practice this late in the week. That's kind of scary. So
it is.
What do you think about
that? He's either been limited or held out and he still played. And you're right. You alluded to it. We just slowed him down because look what he did in week one. He was held out of practice. Look what he did 2 weeks. I felt like Brown was really whether it was the Niner scheme or just the weather, a combination of the play calls. But I felt like Marquise didn't really get the looks on Sunday. So I think it's concerning, yeah. But he's played under these circumstances this year before. So unless he has that D doubtful or that O out next to his name, I'm not going to be worried because then it's like, oh, okay. But, I actually heard today, everybody was at practice except Brandon Williams. So,
who always gets Thursdays off.
Yeah, exactly. So we know that. So and we know even though Marquise is limited, at least he's out there. So limited is maybe managing his load because of his injury to keep him fresh for Sunday. But I don't see Marquise being out because this isn't the first rodeo with this. And I'm going to just say he's going to be out there. He's going to be listed as questionable, but he'll play. Whether his impact, I don't know. But let's just hope that we can get through this year, get him healthy, and then get another offseason to get full speed. But, hey, he's been formidable for us this year, right?
Absolutely, he has. I mean, like I said, he's been a huge part of this team. He made an immediate impact after he got drafted. So when he does miss a week, it is something that you can feel throughout the entire offense that he's not there. Another guy that you definitely feel if he's not on the field and he plays both sides day. And let's see, it is a what is it? Is it a 2-year extension?
Because I know he was looking forward to seeing the Batman suit. And hey, see what happens. You do a cameo, get an extension, it might be a call thing here.
Oh, there we go. I like it. Yes, absolutely.
Might be a call thing.
And we
yeah, that's great. Because he's such that versatile player that plays both sides. I love this. I love it. Like, and it's just, it oozes greatness on the Ravens side, man. It's just great. And they did something different. I don't know if you heard this, but the contract is actually front-loaded with the guaranteed, not back-loaded. So all the front money, it's up front. so it's not backloaded like these deals usually are, where they make a bulk of the money at the end of the deal. So they're giving all the money off. Doing it differently. He's doing it the right way this time. Hopefully, you know, I don't know if there's a right or wrong way to do it, but he's several of the media members that cover the salary and breaking it down and how it affects the books of the team. Another list of Ravens that are being extended and staying here. We already extended Snead for another year. So again, we're keeping the main weapons of this offense. So and here, that means they can pretty much keep the same nucleus and do it next year.
And hey, if it ain't broke, don't fix it is the type right? of thing I'm seeing right now. We also have to bring up congratulations to Lamar Jackson. Like, this guy doesn't need enough awards. He was named the AFC Offensive Player of the Month. I mean, how do you deny that?
Of the month?
Of the
Not
month.
The week. Of the month.
Of the month.
Why don't you just give him the whole yearly award at this point?
I mean, they really should.
I mean, he's the front runner.
Since we've been gone, we didn't talk about it last week, but Matt Skura, he is out for the season with a knee injury. What did you think of the offense without Matt Skura this past week?
I felt like there was no patient, right? But because I mean, I felt like we ran the ball. I didn't feel like there was no effects, just it doesn't take away from Matt Skura. I'm just saying it actually alludes to that it's not hurting the Rams game. When Pat McCrary stepped in, I actually felt mean about it or saying, oh, Matt Skura's an afterthought. It was just like, kudos to the guy who just stepped in, and that's how good we're all playing. And it's like, we had our center got hurt, and it's not like we lost the beat. So that's kind of a good thing, you know? So anything that we have an injury, I mean, we've been relatively healthy all year, and I was really concerned because this line's been very, very solid with run pass blocking and very solid for Lamar. And the last thing you want to do is mess all that up by having one of the guys hurt. Because then it's like, okay, well, throws a wrench in everybody's plans. But kudos to McCrary stepping up. I felt like he had a great game. Again, I'd like to see a little bit more. Obviously, this Sunday we'll see a lot. And if the weather conditions improve, which they look like they are, I kind of want to see it. It was really hard to see in the slop. It being affected. I mean, we had some tough runs too, man. We couldn't really get it going. I mean, we had a good 4, 5, 6 clip runs, but, you know, I really want to really hone in on that now. But though being an away game, I can really focus in on that, maybe see what's on TV on the line. And because there's so many things you can watch live before the play. So I really pretty much, when I'm there live, I'm watching the ball at all times. Well, Lamar has it, or watching the play develop. If it's a pass, I'm watching where the receivers go, who's open, where his reads are. And speaking of that, too, and on TV, I don't know if you caught this or if you remember, the Andrews touchdown. It looked like to me that and it was a great throw. You know, Andrews, he had that great athletic, like, kind of diving backwards, jumping up in the air and catching the touchdown. But to me, it looked like Miles Boykin was wide open in the end zone. On the left. I don't have to go back and look, but I'm just hoping that, you know, Lamar can make all his reads. And again, there's no knock because he's just balling out and doing what he's doing. But, I just feel like that, you know, reverting back to the center position, you know, Skura was awesome for us. Sucks to see him out. But hey, kudos to McCrary for stepping right back in the fray and picking right up where Skura left off. And it just shows you the depth of this team that, hey, again, next man up mantra, let's keep it rolling. And hey, right now, there's no effects to it right now, I see, at least on the naked eye.
Now, this game could be a huge game for the Ravens if they can walk away with a win. The Ravens could clinch the AFC North. So there's a lot of scenarios that could happen, but potentially the Ravens, if they win, could at least clinch a playoff berth. And if they win and Pittsburgh loses, they clinch the AFC North. So already effects to the playoffs coming up this Sunday against Buffalo. Josh, how are the Ravens going to get out of Buffalo with a win? I don't know a lot about the Buffalo Bills. I know that they've kind of turned the—I don't know if they've turned the franchise around—is the correct phrase—but they're doing a lot better than they have in the past. So, what is the big difference between the Buffalo Bills from last year to the Buffalo Bills that we're going to see on Sunday?
Yeah, man, and I feel like when you say that, they're a quiet 9-3 because I feel like no one's really talking about them, right? And what's crazy is they're a game behind the Patriots for the AFC East. And that's crazy. And they play each other in Week 16. You know, the Bills the Bills play us, the Steelers, and then the Patriots the next three games. And I believe they close out against the Dolphins or the Jets in the last game of the year, I think. So, hey, it ain't done. And then the Patriots have the Chiefs on Sunday. Then I think they got they got cupcakes. I think they have the Bengals. Then they got the Bills, and then I think they have the Jets. So, or something like that nature, or the Dolphins. One of the last two games. I have to look at their schedule. But, you know, what the Ravens need to do, come out with a win, is just keep the blueprint going. Keep the game plan the way it is. You know, conform it to the Bills, right? But, you know, just ball out. Continue to just ball out for each other. I mean, if they haven't really seen what the Bills can do. But right now, the way the Ravens are playing, how can you bet against them? How can you pick against them? I mean, I'm not going to say Ravens go up there and win by 30. I think this one might be a closer game than most anticipate. I think I'm not going to get the score predictions, but I'll just put this out there. I think it'll probably be a 7-point Ravens win. I think it's going to be really close. You know, and you're right. I don't really know much about the Buffalo Bills other than that they do have playmakers. John Brown's been formidable, former Raven, as we know from last year. Josh Allen, who is in Lamar's draft class. Lamar's right now the best of that class, Baker included, Sam Darnold, and Josh Rosen of those likes. And, right now, as it stands, they do pose a threat to the Ravens because they got, you know, Allen can run it. He ain't no Lamar, right? But he's been shown to get out of pocket and move the chains with his legs. That's going to be a problem. I feel like the running game is going to be a problem with Devin Singletary. And, dude, Hall of Famer Frank Gore's just chugging on. Frank Gore's had a quiet career, man. This past week, he just moved to third all-time on the rushing list. Third all-time, man. Wow. It's just the dude is just – I think it's Emmitt Smith and Walter Payton he's in front of him. I think he passed somebody. I think he passed Barry Sanders on the list. So Frank Gore's had a quiet career. I mean, you know, but still, Frank Gore. They got Devin Singletary, John Brown. They got some weapons, man. And I think their offense is going to put up some problems. I think the defense is up for the challenge, but they got to contain them. The running game is still a concern, especially after Mostert ran in the rain. I really hope they can contain them because I think the outside runs and the screen passes are going to be the Ravens' Achilles heel on defense. And I feel like the Ravens, whether they start on defense or offense first, I think the offense really has to put pedal to the metal and score. I think with the weather conditions being a lot clearer, I think the Ravens are going to do a lot better job of executing the offense, a lot more passes. I don't see this being a problem at all. Everybody was like, oh, I'm concerned about this game. I was way more concerned about the Niners. I'm not concerned about the Bills. As a fan and as somebody who, you know, covers them the way I do, I'm not going to go up there. I mean, yeah, the Bills have, you know, they have a team to give us a problem, right? But I don't see it being like, you know, I mean, look at the Ravens done this past 8 weeks. They beat every team that they threw at them, including all the good teams in the league. So the Bills are 9-3. They're a good team. I know the 15 AFC right now, but this could really prove important too because of seeding. Because again, the Ravens have the Bills, the Patriots have the Chiefs. Let's say if this is a loss for the Ravens, right? The Ravens are 10-3, the Bills are 10-3, and if the Bills and the Ravens are already going to win the division, it's a matter of are they going to get the second seed? It's scary to me because seeding. Seeding worries me, and this is going to be a huge impact. And obviously, the whole nation knows because CBS basically has the whole nation watching this game at 1 o'clock. It's not flexed. I still don't know why, but I think it's a Sunday night game, the Seahawks and Rams, and obviously they're putting the Seahawks on Sunday night. So, which I get Monday night obviously can't be moved, and I'm surprised not putting this at least a 4 o'clock slot. But it remains to be seen. But 1 o'clock it is. Again, they got weapons, and they're going to use them, and it's up to the Ravens to stop them. But I don't see the Ravens flinching much because of just the confidence and what the team is, how they built them, and I just need to go up with Buffalo and take care of business. Bills Mafia might be breaking tables, but the Ravens are going to be breaking hearts up there because I think the Ravens are going to handle business. I'm going to say 20-13 Ravens in this one.
Oh wow, you're already going with the predictions there. So all right.
Yes, sir. What do you got? What you got? What's your angle on this one?
I also see the Ravens coming away with a win. I just checked the weather report for Buffalo this Sunday, and it looks like 45 degrees, mostly cloudy skies. The Ravens should be used to that. That's kind of what we've been getting here in Baltimore recently, so weather should not be a factor. I can see the Ravens coming away with a win as well. I do think it will be close. I don't think it's going to be a 40-17 win, something like that. I don't think Lamar's going to get pulled in the fourth. This one is going to be a rough win. It's going to be hard to do, but the Ravens can absolutely come away with it. So I'm going to say 24-17 Ravens.
All right, a little bit above me. Okay, I see. 24-17, sticking with that 7-point victory, I see.
Yes, still going that way. So, Josh, have we covered everything for, I guess this is a Purple Friday preview. We're going to release this on Friday.
Finally, here we go. Purple Friday preview, get the train started, man. We covered a lot, man. I mean, you know, apart from, before I get to a hearty quote or even more, I do want to say, playoff tickets did go on sale. We're recording this on December 5th. Thursday, later, obviously, from the holiday and from my Ray Lewis event, recording is later in the week. Playoff tickets did go on sale today, and from the looks of my group chats, it looks like that all is left is single seats. I think all most tickets got sold out. So, and you might ask, gosh, well, how can playoff tickets go sold out? The Ravens released playoff tickets for two potential home games if the road would go through Baltimore. And or, you know, obviously if we win and get second or first seed, divisional game is going to be home regardless. So we're already in the final eight of the NFL regardless. No matter what happens with seeding, if we don't get the first, there could be an opportunity to title game is played Baltimore, which has never happened here in the history of the team. As we know, the team has never been higher than second seed. They've been second seed twice. And with regarding to that, you can buy the rights to the tickets. You can buy the tickets. And what happens is the game's to be determined. Obviously, we know that if a game is not played, you either get refunded or as season ticket holders, you can either have that applied to your invoice next season to prepay for your 2020 tickets. So you're already, you know, prepaid some money there. So either way, playoff tickets get on sale December 5th. It's officially... You can call it what it is, Festivus Maximus season, because the Ravens have a stranglehold on the division right now. It's theirs to lose. They have all these clinching scenarios, and it could happen. And if we can celebrate the AFC North title on Sunday, it's going to be fan-flippantastic, man. But the goal is not done there. That's one. That's two straight divisional wins. We're Kings of the North again, but we want to be Kings of AFC and ultimately the NFL. And we got some bigger, better things to fry here. And going on the season. But with that being said, I'm going to give a hearty quote the Raven, nevermore. I do have a surprise for you at the end of the show. I'm going to ask your opinion or something.
Oh, okay. I'm intrigued. All right, man. So if you want to continue the conversation with Josh or I, you can. It's real easy. All you have to do is tweet to either one of us. You can tweet to me at BrandoCast. Josh, where can people tweet to you at?
Always at ItalianGQ52.
All right, go over to our Facebook page, facebook.com/thecallpodcast. Like us over there. Whenever a new show comes out, you'll be the first to know. Now, we do the show for free. You listen, stream, and download for free on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Player.fm, Overcast, and Google Play Music. All we ask in return is for you to please spread the word about the show. Write us an Apple Podcast review, and then let people know on Facebook and Twitter and Tumblr and Pinterest and Instagram and Reddit and Twitch and TikTok, anywhere you're social, on the web or with your phone. Say,
they keep adding things, don't they?
I know. I don't use TikTok. I don't really know what that is, but the kids are using it. So talk about us on it.
There you go.
Yeah, so let everybody know I'm a Baltimore Ravens fan. I listen to The Call, and you should too. So that's pretty much it for the show this week. Josh, take it out the way you always do.
Brandon, man, thank you so much. I want to ask your opinion on something real quick.
Okay.
You remember a couple of years back, and I had it saved, and I recently watched it again, because I just felt it was night. It was the night before the Niners game. It was going to rain. It was eerie. Remember a couple of years back, you said MPT was showing the documentary on Edgar Allan Poe, the American Masters.
Right.
I recently watched it again this past weekend, and I was actually I want to research the history of Edgar Allan Poe because it just – for all these who didn't watch this, I don't know if it's out there on YouTube or anything or where you could probably inform fans where to find it if there's a replay out there somewhere and how they get their hands on it. But apparently it was this whole 90-minute documentary on Edgar Allan Poe, his life, And it just hit me watching that for the second time here, all these years later, because I think it came out 17, if I recall. I can't remember the date on my DVR, but still on my DVR. I still had it. And I was just like flipping through. I'm like, oh, I want to watch that. Looks, I want to watch that again. So I'm still trying to figure out how Baltimore claims him and also how the Raven came about, because to me in that documentary, I was actually kind of disappointed, unless I'm totally getting this backwards, but I think he wrote the Raven in New York, not in Baltimore.
Yeah, I think the Raven is his most popular
That's why,
story, yeah. And Baltimore claims him because he died here. He lived here for a lot of years, but he died here leaving a bar down in Fells Point. So that's the claim to fame for Baltimore. But there's a lot of different towns that claim him. I mean, his birthplace claims him. I think he lived in Philadelphia for a little while. They kind of claim
him. They said he was born in Boston. He lived in Richmond for a lot of his life, and then they said he lived in New York and in Philly, and I think in Philly was the most, according to the documentary, that was the longest tenured he was in one city at one time. So he was traveling all up and down the East Coast, but what I found, for all those who don't know, go watch it, but what I found intriguing, that's kind of how his life happened, because apparently he went back to Richmond. What I follow is late last days of his life. He went to Richmond, back to where his life started or where his life was. And apparently he was on his way to New York or up north, but he wanted to go to Philly first. But then apparently he made a stop in Baltimore, which was like unscheduled. And apparently he disappeared for 5 days, and then apparently he just showed up dead. So he went on this depressed tirade. I don't know what happened to him, but it's kind of crazy and eerie. And that's what I got out of the film was, you know, his rise to fame in the Raven put him on the map. So that's probably why, because that to me, don't call me ignorant, right? I just didn't know his story. I mean, I know his grave sites here and all that. So I thought the Raven was written here. Never knew all these years until I watched the documentary that I'm like, huh, it wasn't written here. I thought it was. So I learned something about the guy. I learned something about our history, but nonetheless, it obviously, and it goes without saying, cause someone also mentioned that, hey, Babe Ruth didn't play his career here, but he was born here, and we had the birthplace of Babe Ruth. So a lot of famous people either born or died here, I guess. But I was just always wondering that, because I know me and you visited the gravesite. It was a great experience.
Yeah.
And, but it just took me back. I was sitting there watching that on Saturday night, and I'm like, huh, New York, huh? So it was kind of like I just really – and then it was kind of fitting how we beat New York in the first Super Bowl ever for our championship here. So it was kind of like cool – put it all together in perspective.
You know, there used to be three mascots when the Ravens first, Edgar Allen and Poe. So there used to be three Ravens there. And if you really want to look into some of the Poe stuff, just Google Edgar Allen Poe, no mustache. He looks like a completely different person without a mustache.
It was a little weird. Yeah. And I learned this too, one quick point about him was he never used to go by Edgar Allen Poe, because Allen was his foster family's name, last name. He took that last name. He always go by Edgar A. Poe, because Poe was his last name.
Gotcha.
So it's kind of crazy. Like, I know his life was crazy in a whirlwind, and it was eerie, and he wrote a lot of great things, and his life was interesting. That's all I got to say. But it just was interesting to really rewatch that documentary that I had saved. And I was like, you know, I'm going to bring it up on the show. It's kind of interesting. Just fun facts about who the team, because obviously our mascot's named after him. So it's like he's so intertwined with the Ravens. I mean, obviously he felt like the Ravens came about because of him, and he has a big influence, and that's why. And we always say, you know, quote the Raven nevermore, but it's the tie-in, and it speaks a lot. So I'm happy that for some crazy, strange reason, the Ravens in Baltimore City, they claim him for some odd reason, and, you know, hey, we're going forward with it. But we're also moving forward with a Buffalo Bills squad on Sunday. Oh my gosh, it's going to be another good one. Can the Ravens go 9 straight and put 11-2 record up, man? It just, again, no matter what, they can win ugly, they can win pretty. It's almost like, how can you pick against this strength? They're just steamrolling through the NFL right now, and they've won 2 straight months and then a game. And you're looking at the schedule, man, they got 4 left. What 4 can they go 14-2? Can they run the gauntlet? You know, for all those naysayers, are they peaked? how can you peak? You're winning eight straight and you're just winning. And not only that, but everybody, man. You walk in the hallways of work, you walk in your stores, and it's, boy, how about them Ravens? It's just like, it's the talk of the town. It gets people a buzzing. Business is booming. Everybody's talking about Ravens. They're ordering the Ravens stuff. They're ordering tickets.
It wasn't Black Friday on Fanatics. The Lamar Jackson jersey was the most ordered jersey on all of Black Friday.
I was actually Cyber Monday, but same thing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, Cyber Monday, the top seller was still, after all these years, Tom Brady. But Lamar was the most sought-after merchandise, man. And he still leads the league in Pro Bowl voting. It's not even close. So, Lamar Mania, Lamarvelous, no matter what you want to call it, it has swept the nation, not only Ravens Nation, but, man, folks are just – man, I got Patriots fans. I got Seahawks fans at work. I got Cowboys fans. I got all kinds of fans at work, and they're like – boy, Lamar, they love watching him. They all like the Eagles playing Monday night, and the Eagles fans are like, I can't wait to watch your all's game on Sunday because I like watching it. Like, everybody's buying into this, man. So, hey, Ravens fans, soak it up. Stop the bickering. Stop the complaining. Enjoy the ride because other fans are too. And it's just, it's Lamar and the rest of it. It's Lamar and the Ravens, man. I mean, the Ravens, I know it's the whole team, but. Dude, it's Lamar's show. It's Lamar's world, and we're just living in it. And let's take the show on the road, shall we? Bills Mafia. Bills Mafia has nothing on this, man. Lamar and the gang, we're going to come up here and show them how we break tables. We're, like I said, we're going to break spirits, we're going to break hearts, and we're going to break them. We're going to break them hard. We're going to go for that 11th win. We're going to go for that 9th in a row. Why? Because the Ravens, they know what's up. They know how to get it done. They fear nothing at this point, and they're just bawling, absolute bawling. And like we say, the big saying now is, big trust, baby. Big trust. So I think that's the war cry this year. Just big trust. Just trust. Just trust the team. Trust the guy next to you. Trust the Ravens going to get it done. Sit down and enjoy it. 1 o'clock Sunday, if you're going to the game, enjoy it. It's going to be a great day in Buffalo. Let's go up to New York and smack them around. Come back and bring that 11th win home. Ravens Nation, are you with me? Baltimore Ravens, let's fly high.
This has been a production of Brando Cash Entertainment. Music by Brad Lepore and Daniel Kelly from the DBK Studio. For more information, go to BrandoCash.com.